What's your guiding principle in life? What is the thing that directs your decision-making path that you say, okay, when I want to make a decision, this is the way I do that. What's your number one thing? What guides your path and your direction? In our text today on life hacks or life things that make our lives better, Peter talks to us about the thing that matters most. And listen to what he says, right? Everything else that happens in this passage, and he's going to talk about priorities. He's going to talk about how we do what we do and why we do what we do. But he has a phrase in the first verse, submit, we'll get to that word in a minute, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake. Or in the King James it says, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. Peter lives an interesting time. Nero is in power in Rome, and he's a rising power, and he's a cruel tyrant of a leader. And before his reign of terror ends, Nero will do great harm to the church. Christians are concerned. They see the handwriting on the wall. They recognize the future is not going to be easy. It's a tough road that's ahead. And there's a question, right? They faced it earlier. Peter talked about earlier, the question was, do I go along with my family and my friends because it's easier to survive in the community? But now he's pressed it all the way to the ultimate question. Do I go along with Nero for my own personal safety, or do I disagree with him? Do I stand up against him even at great risk and peril to myself? It's interesting because this is Peter, and Peter had once, early in his ministry, not long after Jesus had risen from the dead and appeared to Peter, not long after that, it was Peter who had been preaching boldly in Jerusalem, and he had once stood before the high priest, and right, he said, I must obey God, not man. He had made that statement to the high priest, and they had told him not to preach anymore, not to teach anymore, but he still did it. So it's interesting when we get to this point, later in his life, maybe even 30 years later or so, and Peter is talking to these Christians, and he gives a message to them about how we're to conduct ourselves in relationship to a power like Nero, a leader who can rule a country. And what he has to say is interesting. But I want you to not miss, everything else he's going to say is couched around this one idea. Everything I do is for the Lord's sake. Or another way of saying that is that I want to do what Jesus wants me to do. And in doing so, he's saying, Jesus is the most important thing in my life. Now, I don't know where you are. My suspicion is that for most of us, we could say, sometimes Jesus is the most important thing in my life. For Peter, he's really getting at the point. He's saying, Jesus is always most important. And because he loves Jesus so much, he calls us in this part of the letter to do something that's not easy to do. And that is to submit. Literally, it's a word that means to come under, to put someone else ahead of ourselves or above ourselves. And the first few lines here are almost shocking. Given that Nero thinks that he's God, given that Nero calls himself, his language is that he is not even a mere man, but that he's actually deity. So Nero's language is even offensive to the Christians because they've made a decision. Their decision is that there was deity. There was a time that God dwelt in flesh, and it happened in the person of Jesus, not in the person of Nero. So Peter tells these Christians, he says, submit or come under for the Lord's sake, or because the Lord's what matters most to you. He says to do this to every human authority. I like the King James here. It says, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme. And this is an interesting thing. If you look at the Greek text here where it says supreme, it actually, his word was the supreme creature. It's an interesting word that he used. Because in some ways, it's a word that can mean two things. He's this creature. He's the he's the leader of creation, but it also could be, you know, he's a donkey. He's whatever it is, right? Some of you know a little girl in our church that was in the Christmas play with us, and she attends Columbus Christian School. I think I've told some of you this before, and whenever she sees me, she calls me Marty Pastor Donkey. It's very humbling because I played the donkey in the Christmas play. And so we talk, and Chesney gives me a hard time. But that could be implied in what Peter was also saying. This guy who thinks he's the divine, he is a creature. But by saying that, he's saying God created Nero too. He exists, and God gave him life. So he says, submit yourselves, right, in every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. Submit to authority. What does that mean in our present context, right? Does it mean that those numbers on the side of the road aren't just suggestions? Right? What does that mean to us to submit to authority? What does it mean come April 15th and it's time to lay out some tax money? You know, Peter says we're called to submit and to obey to the extent that we can the laws of the land and the people that God's put into power. And I don't know where you are on all of those things, and I don't want to get into politics, but if there was ever a leader that the people didn't like, it was Nero. The Christians didn't like them. And here's Peter saying, now listen, you have to submit or put yourself underneath Nero in a way, follow his rules, and we can imply here to the extent that it doesn't violate your conscience. And I say that because the Bible has had plenty of examples of people who participated in a kind of civil disobedience because of faith, right? Remember the three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, refused to bow down. Now God used them to great effect, and they helped win over the king. Or Daniel, who disobeyed the law that you couldn't pray. So there are moments where Christians might have to make a tough choice. Incidentally, in the Bible, when Christians made that choice, they understood it might cost them their life to stand against the civil authority that was there. I pray that it doesn't come to that in our lifetime. I pray that we don't ever have to face that situation, but that is the situation that they faced. And don't miss that. So to the extent that you can, submit, right? Submit to these authorities. For so is the will of God. And then this next life tip, right? The first is to submit to authority. The second is this, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. By doing good, the NIV says, you can put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. If the first idea is to submit to authority, the second idea that he puts forth about how to succeed in life, he says, is to be do-gooders, right? Be a do-gooder. Now, I don't know how you looked at this, but growing up, right, a lot of people, they used it as a way to put you down. Goody two-shoes, right? Well, look at you, goody two-shoes. You're just trying to always be a do-gooder. But in truth, right, we're called to be doers of good in the world. And he says, you know, this is the way to live your life. You submit to these authorities and you be a force for good in the world. Make a change. Make a difference. Be someone that's different. You're not just looking out for number one in the sense of looking out for yourself, but you're considering others as well. Do good to all people. For that's what's right. That's the thing that you should do. And if you do that, it will silence some of the ignorant talk of foolish men. Now, when he says that, there's already a lot of people who are talking bad about Christians. In a way, Peter's saying, that's just foolishness and ignorance, what they're saying. And he gets it. Nero is talking bad about Christians. So even though he's saying submit, he's also saying, yeah, I get it. He's saying some really foolish and ignorant stuff. I get it. The only way to combat that is by doing good and proving him wrong. Now, that's not what Christians are about. And so he says, be this kind of a Christian. And it's the same thing in the workplace today. There are a lot of people who struggle with some of the things Christians believe and that they hold on to. And how are you going to fix that? By constantly arguing about theology or God? Or would we not go a lot farther by simply being kind, gentle, humble, putting the needs of someone else above our own? This is what Peter's saying. When we were children, we learned that old song, "They'll know we're Christians by our love." They'll know we're Christians by our love. So Peter's calling them, hey, he gets it. The climate is getting difficult. Nero is ascending in power, and the writing seems to be on the wall for what's going to happen in Jerusalem and for what's going to happen to the Christians. And so he says, how are we going to move forward? Life's getting tough. What are we going to do? Well, first, to the degree that we can, we're going to obey the emperor to the extent that we can. And second, even though there are a lot of people being mean to us, we're not going to return evil with evil, but we're going to meet evil with good. Then there's this third thing that he gets to, and it's an interesting phrase, and it's in verse 16. He says, as free people, or as free persons, and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Now, there's a lot in that. There's, first of all, a way of reading that that says that there were Christians that understood Nero wanted absolute loyalty. And there were Christians who were saying, you know what? I have given my absolute loyalty to Jesus, and therefore, I'm not bound by Nero, right? I don't have to do what he says. There were people who believed that. It was a mistake to believe that, but that's where they were. And so when he talks about this idea as a cloak for malicious behavior, this is the first idea, would be to say, hey, just because you don't agree with Nero, just because you don't like what he's doing, it doesn't mean that you're free to disobey. Then there's a second kind of thing. Then Peter and Paul and the other writers in the New Testament, they all hinted at this, right? And this talks about a second kind of freedom. For the Jewish Christians, they were free to eat meat that was sacrificed to idols if they chose to. But there were a lot of those Jewish Christians, that was a really big stumbling block for them because it felt like they were participating in pagan worship and that to eat the food would defile them. And so Peter and Paul and others said, you know, listen, don't use your freedom as a way to harm other people, knowing that they're going to be offended by what you're doing. No, they asked just the opposite. If you're around people that it offends them for you to eat meat sacrificed to idols, don't do it for their betterment and their good. You know, at Oakville, for a long time, we've talked about, right, the church's position on alcohol is that we are a church that says, hey, the Bible is very clear you shouldn't be drunk and you should not be given to strong drink if you choose to be a leader in the church. The Bible is very clear on those things. What happens with the rest of that is something that we've not made a hard statement on, whether a person should or shouldn't or what they happen. We've talked about how Bob Casey used to always say, right, you'll never become an alcoholic if you don't drink, but the church has not come down and given a hard, definitive statement on that. But having said that, at the exact same time, we run ministries for people who are recovering alcoholics and who are recovering addicts. And how terrible it would be for a Christian to say, well, I have permission, God's not going to condemn me for this, and to use their freedom, if you would, as a stumbling block for someone who really struggles. And so he says there is a time to give up some of your freedoms, that maybe it's okay to do this or that, but be careful that you don't use your freedom in a way to harm someone else. So he gives us this warning, and he says, you know, be careful how you do this and how you live your life. And then he asks, and he hits just these four things very quickly, but I want us to think about them for a moment. In the next statement there, right, he says, honor all men or all people. He has this idea of putting other people above ourselves, and he uses a separate word. The first was submit. Submission isn't always voluntary. It's an idea that says, I'm a slave. That's at the very part of it. Peter understands himself as a slave of Jesus, a slave of God. Paul understood himself as a slave of Jesus. Jesus understood himself as a slave of God, right? In Philippians chapter 2, it says, He took on the very form of a servant, a slave. He considered himself nothing. So submission has that kind of a concept of being under because it's my station in life. The second word he uses here when he says honor is a voluntary thing. I choose to give you respect. I choose to give you honor. I choose to give you glory. It's a choice. And he says, honor everybody. Make everybody recognize that they're special. Make everyone recognize that they have value to God. Honor all the people who are around you. But I want you to capture the message he's talking about here is these Christians are not being treated well by others. And it's not easy to do the thing he's asking them to do, but he says, hey, make sure the guy who's always calling you names and making fun of Jesus, make sure that he knows he's special to God. I'll make him know he's special, all right, you know? That's the situation they were in. It wasn't easy to do the thing that they were being asked to do. It was tough. It was tough. Show proper respect. Honor all the people. And then the next part. He says, and love the brotherhood, or love the people of God, or the family of God. Love the family of believers. He hints at something else that's really important to the story. The church wasn't going to be able to count on the civil leaders around them to protect them, to care for them, to help them. They were going to be, if there were two houses on fire, and one was someone who was loyal to Nero, and the other was one of these Christians who Nero thought was a problem, guess whose house is going to be saved first? It's not the Christians. He understood that for the church to survive the time that was coming, the Christians had to pull together. Peter had already seen this happen. When faith first came to Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost and 3,000 people became Christians and then quickly 5,000 were Christians, the Christians, the Bible tells us, they had everything in common. They shared with one another. There were no needy persons among them, it said. They worked really hard to make sure they took care of each other. And this is one that I think Ogleville Christian Church and a lot of our churches need to hear today. Because we are called to carry each other's burdens and to help each other on the journey. And the danger we run is the bigger we get as a church, and God has blessed us and we continue to grow, the larger we get, the less we seem to know about each other. And the less we're in a position sometimes to understand why a brother or sister has a downcast face, or why they are in a situation of need. And so we want to be vigilant. We want to work hard to foster relationships and get to know each other and to be there for each other. Because, right, that person that's in the pew beside you, you have a responsibility to help carry their burdens and to pray for them. I'm going to encourage you to start a new practice if you don't do this already. I've shared this before, right? The tic-tac-toe board. Look and see who's around you and whether you know them or not. Just spend some time praying for them. Last night, I was invited to the Indianapolis Colts game by Dave Weaver. He swears he'll never take me to another one based on what happened. The first time David Weaver gave me tickets to a Colts game was Pastor Appreciation. He gave me tickets to see the Colts play the Jacksonville Jaguars. Dream and I went to the game. Was the worst loss in Indianapolis Colts history. Literally, worst loss in history. David decided to take a chance on me last night. We go to the game, and of course, as you heard, Andrew Luck retires as our quarterback. Not only that, David had a special ticket that got us into the press conference last night. Yeah, it was an interesting night. Now, I don't know his faith, and I don't know all those things. But when I saw him standing up there giving his speech of retirement, and I saw pain in his eyes and the hurt that was there, I wanted to lift him up in prayer, and I did. And I hope that you have the same sense and the same value of the person who's in the pew beside you, whether you know them or not. And I hope that I have that, that when I see a person who's struggling, who's hurting, who's in a tough spot, that I show them honor, value by lifting them up before God and praying for them, doing what I can to encourage them. I don't think Andrew would have been helped if I said, hey, Andrew, I'll be glad to pay for your lunch tomorrow to help you out. Don't think he needs my money. But some of our brothers and sisters here, that could mean a lot. Can we take you to lunch today? Can we talk to you? How can we help? It's important. Peter understood there was a need for the family of believers to be able to lean into each other in difficult times. And then the last two words, which are so profound, the last two things he says here, there are two phrases that he put right next to each other. And there's a little bit of this that if you were uncertain about who Peter thought was most important, right? Because as you read this, he began with, do it for the Lord's sake, not for Nero's sake, not for someone else's, but do it for the Lord's sake. Do it because of Jesus. And then at the end, he has two phrases that he puts right next to each other. And it's a contrast you cannot mention or you cannot miss. It's God and the emperor. And in the text, he puts them right next to each other for a reason. And he uses two words to describe the relationship. And the first word he uses is a word that we think of, and we don't always like it. It's the word he says, fear God. And we think of fear in negative terms, like you fear a bully, or you fear failure, or you fear the future. But the word that he uses means ultimate respect. It means that you recognize that this being, this creature, this thing we're talking about when we use this word fear, this is it. There is nothing greater. And so when he says fear God, he's saying understand that we are Christians who stand before the greatest force in the entirety of the cosmos, of all things that are. God is awesome. Give him your total and complete respect. And it will look like fear because you recognize how powerful he is and how powerless we are. This is the kind of respect that caused Peter to fall down in front of Jesus and say, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. This is the kind of fear he's talking about. He's saying, you are the ultimate authority. You are the ultimate authority. And whether I respect you or not, it won't change that you are the ultimate authority. So he says, fear God, make him number one. And then that word for the second part, he says, but honor the emperor. Or honor the king. The word for honor is make a choice to show honor to them. They're in a position of authority, but they're not the ultimate authority. And Peter's risking his life to write these words. Because although we lose something in translation, I promise you in the first century, it was not lost. That Peter was saying, God is the ultimate authority. Greater than any other power on the earth. Amen. And I'm not going to be afraid of what Nero can do to me. I'm going to be afraid of what God could do to me. And I'm going to honor God with my life and everything in me. And if I have to make a choice between Nero or God, I choose God. Now that's an awesome place to be. I called this Life Hacks for a reason because Peter is talking to them about matters of life and death. These Christians will, many of them will be called to make the ultimate question, to answer the ultimate question about do I choose to continue to follow Jesus or do I renounce my faith? Do I say, I didn't mean it, and I acknowledge Caesar as God, Nero as God and leader? They'll have to do that. Again, I pray we don't have to make that choice in a literal way, but we all have to make that choice in a spiritual way. Do I choose to live my life reflecting Christ and God and his authority? Or is there some other power that I give more of my attention to? And if I was going to define that power for most of us, it wouldn't be the government, it would be self. Is it going to be my way or God's way? Peter preaches these words, and there are some tough words in there. Fear, respect, submit, for the Lord's sake. Why did it mean so much to Peter? Well, Peter was close to Jesus. He spent a lot of time with him. Peter was restored by Jesus. After the resurrection, even though he denied Jesus, he was restored. Jesus, by name, said, Peter, I want to talk to you. Jesus seemed to reach out to Peter more than once to make sure Peter knew how much Jesus loved him. And Peter has resolved in his heart that if Jesus loves me as much as he does and has proven it time and time again, Peter has come to his final conclusion. I will not deny him ever again. I will not deny him again. You may be here today, and you look at your life and you say, you know, I've lived a lot of my life being self-directed, not God-directed. And maybe there have been some good things, but there's also been a lot of challenges. There are a lot of challenges in the self-directed life. And maybe you're ready to enter into the greatest partnership you will ever enter into, a relationship with Jesus Christ. Maybe you're ready to submit your life to him and give him lordship and authority, the kind of thing Peter was talking about in this text. If you're ready to make such a decision, to be faithful in Christian baptism, to follow up, to die to self, to rise with Christ, then I encourage you and I invite you to make that decision as we stand and we sing our hymn of invitation.